here to share the latest insights on health and healing and preventing pain and suffering. We're going to deal with all that today. From Duke Kunshan University in South Korea comes a study about vitamin B6 and how it helps our blood levels, and that protects us from cardiovascular disease. That's very important. That's saving a lot of lives right there. And also from Konkin University in Thailand comes a study about the memory-enhancing effect of mulberry fruit and ginger, especially for ischemic stroke victims and people with metabolic syndrome. Additionally, we're going to talk about how high-fructose diets could cause immune system damage at a time when we need our immune system more than ever. And that's from Swansea University in the United Kingdom. We're also going to talk about disgusted good. It could be beneficial to your health. Who says? Washington State University has a new study. So there's no need to feel there's something wrong with you if you can recoil when people talk about restricting the diet. This is interesting. So we're going to talk about what happens when you're around self-righteous people who want to make you feel bad about what you're eating. From Food and Nutrition Research Institute in the Philippines, virgin coconut oil is effective in reducing COVID symptoms. How about that? And also, exercise now proven to have mental health benefits for prostate cancer, Edith Cowan University in Australia. And potential nutraceutical properties in leaves of several commonly cultivated plants will tell you which plants can help with Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease. And again, all these are from quality scientific studies and published in peer-reviewed literature. Also today, we're going to take a look at a new study that talks about vitamin D, and it makes a huge difference on your immune system, where vitamin COVID vaccines do not impact immunity or inhibit transmissibility of COVID. In other words, they are not designed to keep you from getting sick with SARS-2. They're only supposed to lessen your infection symptoms if or when you get infected. As such, then you need to know what will help you. Well, it's vitamin D. I'll get to that. Also, we have a couple audio clips, and one is from Russell Brand, the comedian in Great Britain. He has some interesting insights. We're going to talk about what he is saying. And then there's a study that came out that shows ivermectin works. In fact, there are dozens of studies. And yet, Merck, that makes a vaccine, is challenging the safety and validity. So an independent group calls News Roundup, take them to task. So they must think at Merck that no one out there is going to read the original science and show you're wrong. Also, a Harvard study published by the Foundation for Economic Education, Carrie McDonald, says, quote, there's an epidemic of loneliness and it's spreading across America. And I'm going to start, before I go to health and nutrition, just with this, because I'd like you to call in and give your point of view. Quote, loneliness among Americans has been growing in recent years, but the policy response to the COVID pandemic has drastically exacerbated the problem. A new report from Harvard University researchers finds that 36% of Americans are experiencing, quote, serious loneliness. And some groups, such as young adults and mothers with small children, are especially isolated. So that's important. So what are we doing as a nation? How about nothing? What could we be doing? What would you suggest we do? How are you coping with loneliness? I'd like to hear your input. We always have good, insightful responses to these questions. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888. Again, the question is, what policy would you implement at the national level to try to help? And what have you done with yourself to try to deal with loneliness? Because all of us could end up being lonely. Even people in relationships can be lonely if they're not harmonizing right. So that's where we're going to go with that. But we always start with the latest on health and healing. And now, according to news reporting originating out of Thailand, the prevalence of dementia following cerebral ischemia, or a stroke, in metabolic syndrome, and generally what you have is you have two things happening or three simultaneously. You're overweight, that's metabolic syndrome. You're frequently pre-diabetic or diabetic, that's definitely metabolic syndrome. You have a problem with your heart, serious problem, that again is metabolic syndrome. And then you have a stroke. It's a tipping point. You can only put so much burden against the body, and then the body collapses in one system or another, hormonally, whatever. And they found that there is no effective treating this condition right now. However, what they did find is based upon positive modulation effects of a polyphenol-rich substance on dementia, they found improvement in the bioavailability and stability of polyphenols induced by the phytosome technique together with the use of synergistic concept. So in lay language, it means that they used mulberry, M-U-L-B-E-R-R-Y, fruit, and ginger, and the two together at relatively small doses of 50 or 100 or 200 milligrams, not much, can make a difference. So that's important. Again, they're polyphenols, they're chemicals, natural phytochemicals in these fruits that can, and herbs that can help with your brain, help with metabolic syndrome, and help you if you've had a stroke. From Duke Kunshan University in South Korea comes a study about vitamin B6. And what they found is that, of course, cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death in the United States. And lead exposure is an important risk factor for cardiovascular disease that we never talk about. Because when you have excess lead, think of all the people in Michigan, think of all the people around the United States. 5,000 communities have lead that's as bad as in Michigan. And it raises your homocysteine level and creates additional oxidative stress. By the way, that's also what vaccines with adjuvants like aluminum does. The adjuvant makes the vaccine more powerful and gets a stronger reaction, but it also creates oxidative stress upon the brain. So what they found was vitamin B6, which has been shown to reduce homocysteine levels, can modify the relationship between blood lead and the risk of cardiovascular disease. This was a cross-sectional data report. So congestive heart failure, coronary heart disease, angina pectoris, heart attack, and stroke, blood levels of lead are all connected with those conditions. And that's why I always recommend people who are looking to really get with their health have a heavy metal profile done, because mercury and lead and cadmium can all play havoc with your body's biochemistry. But vitamin B6 in the form of a pyridoxal 5-phosphate was what was used in this particular study. But by the way, that's what most of you are going to get if you get B6 in a store. And I would suggest around 50 milligrams, and that can help lower, along with folic acid or folate at 500 micrograms, and also vitamin C at 1,000 milligrams, that can lower your homocysteine level and protect you from having a heart attack. We are nothing but obsessed with sweet in our society. And the way we get a lot of that sweet is through high fructose corn syrup and soft drinks. From a new university study, Swanese University out of the United Kingdom, they found, and they were also working with the University of Bristol and the Francis Crick Institute in London, that consuming a high fructose corn syrup diet puts you at great risk for immune disorders. And fructose is commonly found in sugary drinks, sweets, and processed foods. It's used widely in food production. We definitely know it is associated with obesity and type 2 diabetes, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, and its intake has increased substantially through the developed world in recent years, We're using more of it, not less. According to an article published in the peer reviewed journal Nature Communications, fructose causes the immune system to become inflamed, and that process produces more reactive molecules, which cause inflammation. And this inflammation can go on to damage cells and tissues and contribute to organ and body systems not working as they should. That can lead to disease and death. So, one more good reason to use common sense, some self-discipline, and a little bit of research. And I recently had to listen to a person try to justify why they don't take vitamins, they don't eat anything that's really healthy, they eat what they want. Here was the conversation. Quote, this is from a nurse where I was getting my annual exam and I get my blood work up checked. And the nurse said, oh, you're one of those health fanatics. I said, I'm not fanatical about what I eat, and I never mention what I eat to anyone else because, unless they ask me, because it's, quite frankly, I'm not there as a food cop. I'm not there to intimidate, arrest, or warn anyone. People want to be healthy. We'll know they want to be healthy. She said, well, I listened to my aunt, and my aunt lived to be 106, and she smoked, she drank, she ate everything she wanted, and I do the same thing. So if there's something I want, I eat it. I'm going to live as much as I life based upon my pleasures. And then she looked at me like I was going to respond. I didn't respond. She said, what do you think of that? And I said, doesn't impact me at all. It's going to impact you because for every person it justifies, someone who smoked and drank and ate a garbage diet, didn't exercise, living to be 90 or 100, there are 100,000 who died trying at very early ages. And that's the simple reality. So then the larger question is, why is it that in a nation with so much available information that is good quality information on health, from yoga to meditation to jogging to power walking to new forms of exercise in the gym to healthy diets, why is it we're not doing this as a country? We're not stupid. Don't confuse, you know, what we do with our capacity to do something that it's its opposite. We could do smarter things, but we don't want to. Why? Well, I guess each person would have their own idea of why they don't want to be that healthy. And I actually had someone tell me once, very famous person, by the way, very, very, very famous artist. I was 22 at the time, and this person was old in years, but really caustic. And he said, well, I don't want to be that healthy. And yet I was there based upon his friend, a Park Avenue socialite, an older woman who I had helped overcome conditions that she had. And this person was sick. The world didn't know it. And so I was called in. I helped the person. And I don't know how much of my advice or protocol he used or not. But his idea was, well, I don't, you know, you can go crazy with this health stuff. I don't want to be that healthy. And I said, well, how healthy do you want to be? Do you want to be that sick? Because if you don't want to know how healthy you're going to be and work on it, then you have no control over how sick you're going to be and cannot control it once that tips. It's like you choose not to wear a safety belt and you choose to, you know, be on a in a conversation in a car when it's raining outside. You can't control the accident's going to happen. And I'm sorry, or I should have, don't count at that point. But when we can, in a more measured and sensible way, control what we want to do, then we can have some more control over the outcome. So here's a question for you. And I asked this the other day but didn't get any responses. Why, as a society, do we do almost everything that we shouldn't do? Everything, from the people we vote for to not caring how our taxes are spent, to how we engage in both domestic corruption and international corruption and terrorism. We have a war on terror, and yet we're one of the sponsors of terror around the world. So why is it that nobody seems to care about anything at all? The vast majority of people. Because they don't. You can see it in every institution. You can see it in every problem. And now nobody has to hide their intent. The organizations, corporations, governmental agencies, politicians, and consultants, they can do whatever they want because there's no group of people who are going to say, hold on a second, look at what you're doing and look how it's going to impact other people. So, for example, when you had your chocolate, did you ask whether or not that came from a country where cacao is harvested by slave labor? There's currently a class action lawsuit being filed against Hershey and Mars and other companies because where they say that they worked under slave conditions where that was produced. No. Same with sugar in Dominican Republic. No. Well, then why? I'd like to see if you have an insight in this. Please share it with me. 888-874-4888. Also, according to the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, they're saying that what disgusts people, it turns out, is sometimes good because when we become really affected by what we're seeing, for example, seeing a cow have its throat slit and yanked up by one leg, and you hear its bones cracking, and you feel pain, and it's horrifying. That disgusting moment where we kind of emotionally revolt and we go to outrage, that might be able to cause us then to deal with someone, deal with something. I remember on Long Island, at the Huntington Arts Cinema, I was screening Saving the Planet One Bite at a Time, and a kid came out and asked, he was just standing there. And I said, what didn't you like? He said, I don't want to watch the animals getting killed. Do you eat animals? Yeah. You eat meat, chicken? Yeah. Well, then go back in and watch it, unless you're willing to say, I want to be responsible for not causing suffering, in which case you say, now that I know how much they suffer, I don't want to be a part of that. Or if you're going to stand out here and say, I don't want to see their suffering, but I don't want to give it up, then that's a lesson in life to learn. His mother came out and said, get back in here. You got to see this. And so he went back in. Afterwards, he said, you know, I was crying, but now I'll never eat animals again. Okay, good. So sometimes we have to see what disgusts us, like the corruption within our body politic, or the corruption in the media, or the ability to censor everyone who has an issue that differs from the official agenda. Yeah, that disgusting moment can change us. And finally, from the Food Nutrition Research Institute in the Philippines, coconut oil is effective in reducing COVID symptoms. Results of the study on virgin coconut oil as dietary supplement among COVID-19 probable and suspected cases showed that 5 of the 29 patients who were served meals with the virgin coconut oil manifested diminishing signs and symptoms as early as the second day, while only one patient served with the same meals but without COVID showed similar improvement. This is according to the Department of Science and Technology Food Nutrition Research Institute. And so, now you know, one more thing to add to the list of things that can make a difference. We are 19 minutes into our program. I just want to also mention just a few other things here and that we should pay some attention to, and that some of that is concerning vitamin D. A new report shows that vitamin D has the ability to build up our immune system, taking around 5,000 milligrams, and that can protect us. Vitamin D is scientifically proven, it's in the peer-reviewed literature, to be the most important nutrient to be taking right now. Right behind that's vitamin C and then zinc. Researchers randomly assigned 76 people with moderate to severe infections of COVID into two groups on the day they got into the hospital. The first group, 50 patients, got an injectable form of vitamin D. The second group, 26 patients, got nothing and stayed vitamin D deficient. the results were absolutely mind-blowing. No vitamin D group. 13 out of 26 patients, that's 50%, were admitted to the intensive care unit, the ICU, and two died in the end. The vitamin D group, only one person out of 50, that's just 2%, required ICU admissions, and no one died. This means that vitamin D had a mind-blowing 93% reduction in odds of ICU admission. So, that is something that we should pay attention to, and our government should pay attention to. We're going to take a break and come back, and when we come back, we're going to hear from a person you may or may not have heard of before, and he is from England, and he's interested in what's going on about our rights and freedoms and who's in charge, and Russell Brand. And he's going off on several of these topics. Let's see if it makes any sense to you. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Farmers have been protesting in India for months over new farming laws, which they say will decimate their way of life. But how does this affect you? How does it relate to the Great Reset? And why do people keep saying that Bill Gates is involved?
Hundreds of thousands of farmers marched into Delhi on Tuesday from neighboring states. At the heart of this protest, new agricultural laws passed by the government in September last year.
Farmers have been protesting in Delhi for months, demonstrating over the government's new farm laws, which they say will ruin their livelihoods. The new farming laws mean farmers can sell directly to private buyers instead of government-controlled markets where they get a minimum guaranteed price. The farmers argue this places them at the mercy of uncontrollable market forces and to the eventual replacement by giant corporations. What could be causing this paranoid delusion in these millions of farmers? We know, don't we, from countries like England and America, that once the door to privatisation and the free market is opened, it's very difficult to close it again. And generally speaking, the ordinary people who were told they would benefit from privatisation and the free market end up getting shafted. But don't take my word for it. Let me just talk to a miner in Sheffield. Oh no, I can't. There aren't any more.
Protesters fear the changes will open them to exploitation by private companies, and have been demonstrating against them for months now.
Firstly, farming employs 50% of India's workforce, and 85% of those farmers have small holdings of 5 acres or less. In 2019 alone, 10,300 farmers took their own lives. It's difficult not to see those deaths as the impact of globalization on a cultural system not set up to receive it.
Not far from the chaos and anger, the order of India's Republic Day celebrations. For Prime Minister Narendra Modi, he says the new laws will reform agriculture and help farmers.
All this pomp and pageantry really takes a sort of identifiable, recognisable format, doesn't it? Get some tanks, get some lads marching, high kicks, uniforms and stuff. Contrast that, as the news report indeed does, with the chaos that's taking place at the end of this new political shift. Obviously, there is a direct osmosis between these two states. This is, I suppose, what globalisation looks like. Opportunism, exploitation, further centralisation of power, further disempowerment of ordinary people. The incentives are not how can we help as many Indian farmers as possible, because if that was the incentive, part of the answer wouldn't include driving 10,000 of them to take their own lives in a single year.
You've been an opponent of big multinational corporations, especially Monsanto, to name just one, because of what you describe as their nefarious influence on agriculture.
Vandana Shiva, who hopefully will be coming up on Under the Skin as a guest, is an expert whose analysis has helped us understand this situation much more deeply and how it interconnects with a broader global picture about the centralization of power at the cost of the lives of ordinary people.
You know, the entry of corporations into agriculture is so wrong because the corporations only bring poisons. Most of them have roots in Hitler's Germany.
Oh, good. Well, Hitler's Germany. Once a company's got roots in Hitler's Germany, it's difficult not to have some doubts about their incentives and objectives.
In making gases to kill people in concentration camps.
That was not their aim. Their aim was to give people enough.
No, the aim was to make chemicals that kill people. After the wars, they said, why should we stop making these chemicals?
We're making these chemicals now, just because there's not a war on. You mean we'll give up our precious chemicals business?
Let's say now they'll kill pests, they will give fertilizer. Fertilizers were made in the same factories that made explosives.
There must be something else we can do with the chemicals. They do kill people, though. Yeah, they kill people, but, you know, the war's gone now, so there's a lot more people around.
And ammunition for Hitler's
Germany.
That's
not the same goal.
No, the companies are the same and the processes are the same.
Also, the Nazis weren't going, ha, 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 we're evil. They were saying, we're doing this for the benefit of the world. They're saying exactly the same stuff.
So your rhetoric might change, but the goal does not. The materiality of a death-making chemical doesn't change when you say it's now for feeding the world.
It's pretty clear that what she's saying is that there are deep entrenched problems at the root of these chemicals, their origins, and introducing them for the benefit of global corporations is obviously going to unsettle the infrastructure of a evidently quite fragile agricultural nation.
So Monsanto came illegally, didn't take any approval, with the promise that they would increase farmers' incomes and have this magical technology to control pests. Well, the bollworm is now resistant. Farmers are in debt. Farmers are committing suicide.
All right, there are some side effects. The bollworm is resistant. Farmers are now in debt and they are committing suicide. But other than that, these death chemicals are winners.
The area has been ruined. The pollinators are gone.
All right, we ruined the area a little bit. Yes, plants can't pollinate in the same way. But other than that, the death chemicals are winners.
The groundwater's gone.
We've also had some problem with the groundwater. All right. All right. Also, the groundwater has been damaged. But other than that...
So, I saved seeds. We brought organic cotton seeds back. We work with the Gandhi ashrams on hand-spinning and hand-weaving of this organic cotton. The economy in the villages where we work has jumped tenfold.
It's a shame, isn't it? Like, that basically our grandparents were right when they said, why don't you just keep things simple, stop watching that television, don't eat so much sugar, make your own clothes, have a hobby, connect to nature, get outside, turn the TV off. All that stuff was actually correct. It's more beneficial for us. In simple terms, it's moving into alignment with the conditions from which we are evolved and developed. The problem with globalising, centralising forces is they don't care for the individual in the way that we've evolved over millions of years. So we find ourselves in both economic, ideological and living conditions that are just not appropriate for the type of creatures that we are. We need to return to simple and slow living. We need to connect to the conditions that we evolved alongside, that we evolved to live in.
Bill Gates is actually continuing the work of Monsanto. I've talked about how he's pirated seeds we have saved that tolerate salt and floods, and he says invention. This biopiracy is a bit like Columbus. Why do I call him today's Columbus? Because he's carving out new colonies.
Many people regard Bill Gates as a philanthropist, as a person who does a lot, you know, like the elimination of malaria. But as Vandana Shiva is now articulately explaining, obviously better than I could, with more wisdom and knowledge than I'm likely to accrue, that there could be alternative motivations for this apparent philanthropy.
You say he has a strategy, a nefarious strategy, which you describe as philanthrocapitalism.
In the episode of Under the Skin we did with Joel Backin, he also explained that good companies, inverted commas good, are bad and creating problems because they are now claiming to be more than profit-driven enterprises. They're sort of lifestyle companies, ideologies. This is true dystopia. True dystopia looks quite nice and has high aims. It's not cackling, draconian and overtly Machiavellian. It comes sort of clear, well-branded, apparently kind. But the objectives, if the objectives are the accumulation of power rather than the sharing of power, then you know what you've got.
You're not saying he's using the wrong methods. He's pursuing a wrong goal with self-interest. You also attack Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook, saying they're all linked together.
You're saying that powerful billionaires might somehow have shared interest. What could Mark Zuckerberg, the plutocrat leader of Facebook, have in common with Bill Gates, the plutocrat leader of Microsoft? I mean, what possible shared interests could these two guys have?
I mean, this reeks a bit of conspiracy theory, doesn't it?
People's frustrations and concerns about globalization are not properly addressed because the objectives of globalizing interests are very, very powerful, and they align very neatly with the interests of the media. So you won't hear negative opinions freely expressed because that's what power does. Power eliminates opposition.
We stopped Mark Zuckerberg from trying to get into Indian agriculture. It was a big mobilization of people who believe in the open internet.
What did he want to do?
Well, you know, basically what they do is they mine the data from the farmers.
Large corporations such as Microsoft, Amazon and IBM are racing to collect as much data as they can from all nodes of the food system, becoming more and more integrated and connected through corporate partnerships, mergers and takeovers, enabling corporate capture of the food system. Once captured, this can then be processed with their powerful algorithms to provide farmers with real-time data and analysis on the condition of their soils and water, the growth of their crops, the situation with pests and diseases, and the looming weather and climate changes they may face. There's nothing wrong with that, except that behind it is the imperative to centralise power and create profit. The data and the knowledge of soil and crops will all be used to disempower those farmers, not to empower them. Some of these ideas, that access to that data, might be appealing for farms that can afford technologies, but it's a different story for the 500 million small farm households in the world who produce most of the world's food, who cannot afford the high-priced data-gathering technologies. I suppose it seems clear, then, that to change the world, we must empower this majority that do not have access to these centralizing systems and have to therefore kowtow to them, ultimately yield to them and be subsumed into their centralizing might. For the corporations investing in digital agriculture, the objective is to integrate millions of farmers into a vast, centrally controlled digital network. Once integrated, they'll be heavily encouraged, if not obligated. What's that gun for? That's the old encouraging gun. Don't speak ill of the encouraging gun. To buy their products and to supply them with agricultural commodities. All of this functioning through the mobile money systems being developed by the same companies. Doesn't the image come to mind of a sort of giant claw descending from the heavens and placing these nodes that are gathering information into the lives of people that have been existing for a long time in relative comfort? I'm sure Indian agriculture is fraught with all manner of complex difficulties, famine, failings, poverty and problems. But let's not pretend that big tech and the Great Reset are about anything other than centralising and maximising their own power, because this is, again, the requirements of the ecologic and ideological system that underwrites all of these undertakings.
Bill Gates does both. He takes living resources and our seeds.
I'll put this in a little different perspective, because I covered a lot of this in Seeds of Death about GMOs. Historically, in India and other countries, they had what was known as a community cooperative food program. People were poor, but they were not hungry. And the reason they weren't hungry is because everyone in the family helped with something that they were growing or making. So you would have what we would now consider a farmer's market that might have 200 to 300 different people in a community, and each one would contribute something different. Like someone might, for example, have saffron that they've grown, and someone else maybe different types of, over 100 different types of peppers. Someone else maybe it was a rice. So everybody was selling something in a small sometimes covered, other times open, kiosk. And so let's say that at the end of the day, you had sold your rice, but you didn't have potatoes. So the person, you would give rice to the potato person, and they would give you potatoes. Everybody exchanged. So everybody had an abundance of food. Again, they were poor, but they had abundance of food. And most of their agricultural techniques honored the land. These are techniques that had come down through generation after generation. In came the Rockefeller Green Revolution and radicalized all of it. Why should you have 200 people on this plot of land when we can have one owner and grow it all in a genetically engineered rice? And that's what happened. And all over the world, genetic engineering began to take hold. So the money didn't, and the food didn't, and the products did not assimilate around a group and be beneficial to them. Everything went out of the community. and went somewhere else to be sold. And the people behind this were the geneticists and the people making the pesticides, because historically they would rotate their crops. And when you rotate crops, then pests have a hard time growing in them. That's why there's been a lot of growth in the movement towards more natural organic growing. Now, I've taught organic farming. I'm a certified organic farmer. So I showed how to plant marigolds and daisies and garlic and onions and shallots in between crops to keep the bugs out, because the bugs don't like these, or how to spray your crop with garlic and cayenne pepper. Doesn't hurt the plant, but the pest it does. These people knew all that. They were wonderful shepherds of the land. In comes Bill Gates, and he's the largest owner of farmland in the United States. He doesn't care about organic farming. In fact, he's saying, we're going to give up meat because we're going to go to synthetically created, genetically engineered meat. Yeah, and if you watched each process of it, it's gross. But that's what they're doing. So yeah, he'll have a genetically engineered meat, which is mean there's going to be genes in what you're eating that could adversely affect your own body. But no studies on that. Just how can we get this genetically engineered meat to as many people as possible? So that's his answer. Technology for everything, and technology just a few people control, not everyone. And that's why you have hundreds of millions of people protesting in India now against the Modi corrupt government, because the farmers have been left behind, and these were the same farmers who committed suicide in huge numbers, over 200,000 thus far, much higher than 200,000. And as Vandana Shiva, and by the way, we filmed in Vandana Shiva's farm at the base of the Himalayas a couple of years ago, and she was talking about how they had over 1,100 varieties of mango alone. The variety of fruits and vegetables, herbs and nuts and seeds there is just mind-boggling. But then we didn't want all those variety. So seed companies came in like Monsanto and bought up all the other small companies, so you didn't have all the natural variety and heirlooms. That's why this year, starting in 2 months, I'm going to be trying to create America's largest heirloom seed base of getting seeds from around the world that are not genetically engineered, so we can procreate them and grow them and then distributing to farms and interested people throughout the world. And this whole big battle is going on right now in Mexico to get back their natural heirloom grains and legumes instead of the genetically engineered ones. And by the way, the genetically engineered cotton, which was Monsanto's in India, was a disaster. And unfortunately, the poor farmers were bankrupt, so they thought by killing themselves it would remove the debt to their family. Not true. They killed themselves and generally drinking a pesticide, and then the family was now left with a burden of not having someone who could do the farming but had all the debt. So yeah, they're angry, and rightly so. You wouldn't know any of this from American media because, well, we don't focus on that. It's not an important problem for us. Let's say hello now with Les from New Orleans, Louisiana. Hi, Les.
Hello, Gary. I think your question was about why the citizenry or the population doesn't get it or see it, or was that it?
Yes, where they seem to be doing everything against their own best interest.
I think it's planned. It's all the powers that be don't let anyone have the proper information. By the way, thank you for giving us this incredible information every day on PRN. I don't know what my wife and I would do without you, because, you know, she's a musician and I'm a band manager, so we don't have a lot to do these days. But I really believe that the powers that be are making sure that we don't know the correct information. I mean, everything they say is a half truth, or they try to go right into our flawed belief systems to push us in the wrong direction. If that makes sense, I'm not sure it does.
Let's step back from your statements. for a moment less and take a look. Okay, right now there's a movement by Beverly D'Angelo and her three-year best-selling New York Times best-selling book, White Fragility, to get corporations that hire the people and be in process of hiring people, they must acknowledge their whiteness. And there's even a new test out, 7 steps to overcome your whiteness. And that is, to me, the most rampant form of racism there is. This could lead to another race war, unfortunately. And it would undo all the major gains by people of all backgrounds, all ethnicities, all cultures, and all political persuasions for the last 65 to 70 years. We've made major progress. Do we have racists? Yes, we do. Do we have people who are just lacking in the desire, the capacity to better understand how dangerous a racist thought is? Yes, of course we do. But are we a racist society? Absolutely not. And I could give you a million examples. But they're the kind of people that wake up each morning, like the people who are trying to be a part of this cancel culture, and they intentionally plug their psyche into anything that's negative and toxic. If one person gets killed by a police officer, which is a tragedy and shouldn't happen, they suddenly, all 800,000 police are racist. Pigs, firemen, and bacon, and yet they want to defund the police. When you defund the police, suddenly there's a skyrocketing crime rate in Minneapolis and in Seattle. So now it comes back on them. Oh, we didn't anticipate that. Why not? Did you know all 800,000 police? Did you know about their backgrounds? Do you know how many people are helped every day by police who are not racist? No, they don't. They don't care about that. So we see that as one example. Now they're trying to teach this same racist screed in schools. And now they're also, that's one example of what you're saying, because that's the only message given right now. If you challenge that, you're a racist. If you don't acknowledge your racism, you're racist. So think of all the majority, the vast majority of Caucasians throughout the world, in Scandinavia, in Italy, in France, in most of Europe. And are you going to say that every one of those people was born a racist, so it's in their genes? Well, now that is committing to the worst aspect of racism. Now go over to the other side. What if COVID was not killing all the people, but the flu, being relabeled as COVID in many cases, and pneumonia, was killing? Now you've skewed the figures. What if the PCR test that they're telling us is the good test is being duplicated at 40 repetitions, and anything above 35, even Fauci says, is garbage, there's no virus there. But all these tests are at 40 and 45 repetitions. That means that all the people are healthy, asymptomatic, no virus in their body, now they're a case. Oh, now you got a case. Now you got to get the vaccine to protect you and other people. Yet there was never a study done of the vaccine showing that by getting a vaccine, you'd be protected from getting COVID or transmitting COVID. That wasn't part of what they did. But we'll give it to senior citizens nursing homes. But the very people who should never be given a vaccine are people with autoimmune conditions, because one of the side effects is it can kill them. And what do we see in Spain and in Denmark and in France? We see people dying in nursing homes. Why? Because we didn't choose to give them quality of life for their comorbidities and vitamin D and C or ivermectin. We chose to give them a vaccine because someone dictated that. That could only occur when we had the massive amount of media only giving one side of a story. When we're told that 5G is the best thing in the world, just watch any commercial. 5G, I'm connected with everything. Yeah. Are you aware of the over 10,000 studies showing the dangers of 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5G? No. Are you aware that there's going to be over 55,000 satellites in our orbit beaming down the short burst of electromagnetic frequencies? No. Are you aware that there are cancers of the body and that are due to electromagnetic frequency? No. But you're only telling us the good part. Why don't you invite any of the doctors and scientists who are experts in 5G, 4G, 3G, because it would disrupt the narrative. It would cause people to think, well, hold on, you're telling me that my daughter sleeping with a cell phone under her pillow at night is dangerous to her brain? Yes. And she could develop a glioblastoma or astrocytoma? Yes. And your young son wearing his 5G cell phone in his pants could cause genital mutations and prostate problems? Yes. And a woman wearing it on her heart could cause heart and breast problems? Yes. But the media will not cover that because they're sponsoring it. So everything that is wrong is being protected if what is wrong benefits the people in power. And now we have only power. You have the executive branch, the legislative branch, and judicial branch controlled by an ideology group who don't care whether you're Democrat or Republican. That's irrelevant to them. They care about you obey the law. And when they say something can't be said, that word is now outlawed. When they say you can't challenge anything going wrong, if we say you can't, then Google, Facebook, Twitter, Wikipedia challenge you. So you're absolutely on the right side of this. Absolutely 100% on the right side of your comment, Les. So you and your wife, keep listening. And by the way, tonight at 7 o'clock on the Progressive Commentary Hour, I'm having on one of Germany's leading investigative journalists and documentarians who just did a blistering 2 documentaries on Wikipedia. And they filed and won a lawsuit against Wikipedia. So their editor over there, he's going to reveal a lot of things we didn't know and the average person needs to hear so you can walk away from Wikipedia and not use them. And we should walk away. I don't have Facebook. Yeah, I don't use Google. I don't have Twitter. I've never Twittered anybody anything, and I don't want to. And yet people say, well, then you're going to be off the grid. Then nobody's going to know what you're saying. Well, okay, tell that to the 14 to 17 million people who came to the show last year with over 150 million downloads of my program in the last 10 years. So word of mouth still counts. People telling the truth and harmonizing that truth and doing your fact-checking and seeing what's false and what's real. Thank you very much. I appreciate your input down in New Orleans, Louisiana. And now let's go over, let's say we have time to say hello to, who do we got here? We have Anne from New Jersey. Anne, you're on the air.
Hi, Gary.
Hi.
Thank you so much for all that you do and mostly for reminding us that there are others out there like us, you know, that want to progress. We want to move forward in our lives. And on the why don't we care, I think that we're so many people are inundated with the message that we're broken and we're drug deficient because we're watching, you know, people are watching TV. I was standing in a health food store a few months back with a group of women from the ages of 20 to their 80s, mid-80s, and none of us were on any medications. And I said, well, what do we all have in common? And nobody watched TV. And I think that's one of the things that, even in movies, they never focus on, if they do focus on any diet or lifestyle changes that can be made, it's always minimized. And the, you know, cut, burn, poison is always focused on. And if this is the diet that everybody's, mental diet that everybody's being fed all the time, it's as if they're fed like, well, you can't care, because if you do, there's no point to it. And I just thank you for pushing us to care and share the care with others.
Well, just remember, another human being is a person with a soul. They have a life force. Look at every baby and tell me the racist baby. Tell me the sociopathic baby. Tell me the manipulative, adaptive, aggressive baby. They don't exist. Everything comes into life pure. May be defective based upon what the parents have done in their life, but the spirit, the energy is pure. As long as we can harmonize with pure energy with other people, then everything else is secondary. In fact, it's to the enrichment of our lives that we have people from different cultures and ethnicities and points of view in different ages, because that simply allows us to see the limitations of our own views and to grow towards a greater awareness and acceptance of others. And we're not talking about that today. We're into the blame game of trying to separate people and have people hate each other as if they're the other. They're unsacred, and therefore whatever you do to them, they deserve. And that is so wrong. Identity politics is a disease. It's a pathology. And as is all this attacking now someone because they're Caucasian or their whiteness, it's stupid, beyond stupid. Thank you for seeing that there's a larger life that we all should be living and connecting to, and that is not adulterated. It has not been homogenized, pasteurized, blanderdized, and standardized. We are not all fit in the same mold. That's what makes us unique. Appreciate you calling. Have a nice day. Okay, we're getting up here. See if I have time from, that was Ann from New Jersey. And I believe we have James from New York. Hi, James.
Hey. The thing we should implement is to do longer and faster EFT, like Robert Smith. And this is meditational statements focusing on the non-physical and physical appearances and see how it is as they arrive back through this exercise to the physical without a need for clear explanation, meditating through the two and draw a program, trail through their mind. Imagine the physical of themselves and the green earth. They will soon understand the drains of mistakes and see the solid fluidity of love and the direction the wrong sideways ladders don't lead to or resolute anywhere.
I would agree with that. That is a very profound and insightful statement you've made, James. Thank you very much for calling and sharing it. Oh, by the way, I just realized it's Robin DiAngelo, not Beverly DiAngelo. Beverly DiAngelo is an actress. She has nothing to do with that. I just wanted to correct that. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I'll entertain some additional comments from people in the audience. And by the way, there's right now a new resolution in Congress to get the FDA and the FTC to acknowledge that vitamin D can help us fight COVID. Congressman Glenn Grotham from Wisconsin has introduced a House resolution to recognize the significant role vitamin D may play in the fight against COVID-19. If passed, the resolution will encourage official recognition of vitamin D as effective in preventing serious COVID infections. So we want to get your legislator to support Glenn Grotham, G-R-O-T-H-A-M, from Wisconsin, that piece of legislation, so America would all be taking vitamin D3. Okay? Now, we're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Just a couple program announcements, and then I'm going to go back to your calls. If you'd like to call in and share thoughts on what we've been discussing, please do it, 888-874-4888. Just want to mention, however, that this Sunday I'm going to be showing a film in a webinar. The film is called The Cost of Denial. And why it's important is this, because it shows that there were cures and healthy, successful treatments, all documented. The patients, the doctors, everything is laid out, and including all the journalists. And guess what? All the journalists who covered the story, came to the center, interviewed the patients, all African Americans. Not a single mainstream journalist showed up. But you get to see all this. This was put together by the Society for Independent Investigative Journalism. It's an hour and 23 minutes long. That's going to start at noon this Sunday. Then we're going to have a panel, outstanding panel, Dr. Meryl Nass, and we have Dr. Peter Bregan, a whole lot of people who are going to talk about this. Then we have a separate showing that is part of a large repository that we're putting together of everyone in the world who's a credible Orthodox scientist or physician challenging the COVID, what we know about COVID and what's been misled about COVID. So if you want to join us, go to GaryNall.com or PRN.FM or call our office at 646-926-5422. You're going to get a lot of information because the second part's about COVID and some really outstanding voices you're going to hear. Also, for those interested in, we were filled with the anti-aging study, but one person yesterday, said that they cannot attend, so we have room for one person in our anti-aging study coming up the last 2 weeks of April. And so if you'd like to be a part of that, then you can contact Luann Panessi. She'll do the screening, see if it's right for you. This is where I'm going to do all humanly possible to help people reverse their aging process. In effect, have them start all over again. Start that clock of aging towards death backwards. And you can call Luann at 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. And if you doubt that this is possible, I've done three in the last year, in 2 months. And the stories that we have filmed that will be coming out later this year, they seem like miracles. But it's real. All right? We're going to go to Bob from Virginia in a second, Bob. But before then, one special that they asked me to mention today, and it's a terrific special. You're going to save, you're saving here over $60. It's Supremacy. I'm talking about the high-potency bioflavonoid buffered mineral ascorbates, the cherry 180 chewables. This has got the magnesium ascorbate, the zinc ascorbate, the potassium ascorbate, the manganese ascorbate, the cherry, acerola cherry, and you're getting approximately 500 milligrams per one tablet, and you get 180 tablets. But then this also comes with a product I never have mentioned. God, it's been years, Garlic Plus. And I'm mentioning it because I just started taking it again myself. Why? Because it's got in each tablet, it has 500 milligrams of garlic. It's got aloe vera. It's got ginger and onion and cayenne and Brussels sprouts and cabbage and broccoli and cauliflower. And it has all these wonderful nutrients in here along with the garlic. Talk about something that would really be useful every day. As you start the day, Garlic Plus. Because when you're taking garlic with cayenne and ginger and aloe vera and Brussels sprouts, cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, you're taking something terrific. And all this comes with a DVD you haven't seen. It's called How to Add Healthy Years to Your Life. And so the whole package is valued at, you pay $84.99. You save $60. All right? So how do you get this? I'm going to give you a number and call this number and get this special today. It's a phenomenal special, saving $60. But it's everything can help you, especially at this time when our bodies need help. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Or you can call Neil in our vitamin closet at 646-926-5430. So let's go up here and say hello to Bob from Virginia. Hi, Bob. Your turn.
Hi, Gary, and thank you for all you do. It's great. On vitamin D, I thought I heard you say 5,000 milligrams. Did you mean 5,000 IUs?
Yeah, 5,000 IUs.
How much zinc did you take?
50 milligrams of zinc.
50 milligrams of zinc.
Yeah, and 2,000 milligrams minimally a day of vitamin C. I would suggest more, but I'm giving you the minimum.
Okay. And then just a quick thing on vaccines. I'm not going to explain what I'm going to say. You can do that after I'm done. Just focusing on the Pfizer, they call a vaccine, which is really not a vaccine, according to Dr. David Martin. So there are a lot of major problems, but just to keep it simple, you know, Occam's razor. Keep it really, really, really simple. They try to cause a spike protein in the body to be created by our cells in the body, so our body becomes a spike protein factory. But they never test in the protocols. They never test for the spike protein before they start, and they never test after it starts. So how do you know it really happened? And then once the spike protein is produced, does it cause an antibody in the body to be created? Well, we don't know because they never tested for it. And even if it did, that antibody would be a spike protein antibody, not a COVID virus antibody. And there's been never a study done that I could find that says if there is a spike protein antibody in the body, it protects someone from COVID. So it's just very simple. They never reported that they tested for COVID antibody because that's not what they're doing. They're causing spike protein antibody in the body, in the human body to be created. And, of course, there's no evidence that that even happens. So the whole thing is bogus just from the simplest test that they could have done was test the antibody first, give the vaccine or give the injection, and then test again. They never did that. So the whole thing is just like totally crazy from the beginning.
We have no more time, I'm sorry, but I thank you for your call. And what we're going to do is we're going to deconstruct everything that we can prove scientifically and clinically is wrong with the COVID narrative this Sunday. That'll be around 2:30 when that part will start. And we'll be showing in video, you'll be able to watch from a larger archive that we're assembling all this week and have been for the last month. Okay? Thank you. Thank you all for listening and look forward to seeing you tonight at 7 o'clock when we're going to be talking about Wikipedia. Wicked, wicked Wikipedia. Walk away from it, and you'll see why when you hear tonight's show. Have a nice day, everyone.